It's time for Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And here is your host, Inside Towers business editor, John Celentano.
Hello, everyone. Glad you could join us. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. The Q3 2021 issue will be available in early December. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. And now for our topic today. We hear a lot about robust projections for thousands of small cells that will be needed in coming years as mobile network operators densify their networks, particularly in populated metro areas. Small cells typically are deployed on street furniture, such as utility poles, streetlights, or custom-built poles installed along city streets. The challenge for network operators is to figure out where to place these small cells, how to power them, and how to connect them back into the network, all in a cost-effective, efficient, and reliable manner. And more importantly, how to keep these small cells functioning during a power outage. Joining us today to talk about these and other issues related to small cell deployments is Tom Kraft, Engineering Director for Metro Cell Integrated Solutions and Microwave at CommScope. Tom, welcome to Tower Talks.
John, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Tom, tell us about CommScope's involvement in small cells and your concept for supporting small cell deployments.
Well, CommScope is a global company, about 25,000 employees worldwide. One of the segments or business units that it has is outdoor wireless networks. It's mm-hmm. led by Fareed. We have a new management team in under Chuck Treadway, and they're looking to develop what they're calling CommScope Next, which is bringing out next generation solutions for the cellular network, especially in the outdoor wireless networks. And so we look to small cells. We think that there's two layers. We know that spectrum is key. Mm-hmm. There's the macro layer and there's a small cell layer. And we're investing in both of those to bring services out or the infrastructure out for the service providers to help our customers with communications.
Mm-hmm. So, I looked at the material you provided, and we're looking at a concept that's referred to as a power hub or a centralized hub that supports small cells. Where did this idea originate from?
Yeah, well, the power hub originated from two areas. I guess the first would be when we started looking at small cells a while back, we started looking at C-RAN, centralized RAN. And what that network promised was that by taking elements that were typically distributed mm-hmm. RAN and centralizing them, you can get a good balance between network performance, but by centralizing components, you can get some cost breaks in the number of network elements that you deploy. So that's part one. And then part two is, I think we'll get into this a little bit later, but we saw a challenge of having an efficient and reliable energy piece or powering piece to these small cells. And so we look back in time a little bit. I come from an era where we did line powering mm-hmm. out of the old telco days. And we noticed that in that area for line powering, there was some numbers or values, 200 volts line to ground, 400 volts line to line, that was used for powering back in those days optical network units. Mm-hmm. And we saw that technology, which was accepted in the communication space. And so we blended what we recently learned on C-RAN and the cost savings it could provide, as well as line powering with the increase in voltage would give us a more efficient and reliable network. So we blended those two together and packaged them into what we're calling our power hub.
So what elements are really built into the power hub? Obviously a power source of some kind, do you have batteries? We'll talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So there's the power plant. Certainly, we're discussing how to get power out to small cells as one of the challenges today. And so it has a power plant in there. The power plant has to take an AC connection and it has to convert it to this boosted DC connection. Mm-hmm. And so there's a power plant in there. It's modular. So it has any number of shelves, depending on the cabinet size. And then there's modules which fit into those shelves so that a service provider or network operator can take and deploy a number of shelves and a number of modules, depending on how much power they need into the network. So that provides the power plant. Mm-hmm. On top of the power plant is a controller. The controller does the network energy management function. So it sees what's coming into the cabinet. It sees what it has for creating power within the cabinet, and it sees the load that's in the outside plant, meaning small cells or whatever is we're hooked up to from a power right. perspective. Right. And looking at all of those, it kind of manages the safety and it manages the network function, the way the system operates for increasing efficiency. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that this controller can take, for instance, you mentioned an outage in the introduction, this controller can take, recognize an outage, and it could know which critical nodes are needed in the network, and it could turn down nodes that are non-critical and keep nodes up that are critical so that you can have increased network availability of those critical nodes. So the controller does that. And then I would say the last piece, there's fiber in there and there's some fiber functions in there, but I think the last piece is the enclosure. Mm-hmm. The enclosure is a critical element in the outside plant. It protects all of the equipment that's inside the enclosure. It provides that intrusion protection that's needed for rain and dust and keep the reliability up, but it also houses and gives, from an aesthetics look, it gives a nice look to the solution so that it sits in the outside plant, again, protecting, gives it some aesthetics, and then allows those equipment inside to function properly. So I would say those are the three main elements of the solution.
Are these big cabinets, Tom? I mean... You have batteries in them as well, no?
That's correct. They could be big. You know, today is all about distributing the network. So there are people talk about putting containers out at cell yes. sites or macro sites, you know, things that yes. large. So that's on the big side. That's not what CommScope does. We're in the cabinet range coming from the history of AT&T Bell Labs. Working all the way through those network element developments. And so we're more on the cabinet side. We have a series of cabinets from small. We call it an 8RU cabinet or a CMC8. So it's, you know, relatively 16, 18 inches tall up to the traditional 6-foot cabinets. Mm-hmm. Depending on how many batteries you need, we would outfit the system with the right size cabinet. Typically, we deploy our middle of the range CMC21. It's transformer height. Mm-hmm. So when we deploy these systems out in the outside plant within the small cell layer or cluster, most customers require transformer height or the lower height cabinets so that it blends well within the environment. So we have a full range depending on the needs of the customer.
Yeah. Does the customer specify a certain battery reserve time, 4, 8 hours, whatever the case may be? Is that part of the design of the unit?
It is. Traditionally, at the macro site, there are requirements for 4, 8, 24 hour yeah. backup time. So long time periods for backup because they're crucial. They provide the coverage and the critical infrastructure in case of disaster or something that occurs. In the small cell layer, it has not been the case. And that's one of my struggles I have as I come from the old telecom days, everything was 5.9s. And now they're taking and they're plugging these small cells into an AC connection, which is traditionally 3.9s of availability. So if this small cell network becomes both coverage and capacity and critical for users to connect to other functions in the network, there will be a problem. I mean, we have 3.9s availability can be as much as 8 hours of outage per year. And that tends to be not acceptable. 5.9s being a couple of minutes a year. So I think it'll drift to some battery backup, but that's the goal is to plan is to have you know, that type of element within the system. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You mentioned fiber optic equipment in the hut as well. Feeding that power and those signals to the small cells involves what a hybrid cable of some sort?
Yeah, so the system is constructed of a hybrid cable. So you bring up a good point, because I waffled on the fiber piece in the cabinet only because we learned as we were developing the system, the meet me point for the fibers doesn't necessarily have to be where the power location is. And that's important, because in the planning today, we have three, I'll call them disaggregated functions within the companies. We have RF planners, we have optical planners, we have power planners, and they all come together somewhat, but they all plan separately. And so we needed to create a solution where fiber and power did not necessarily have to merge at the same place, and it gives some flexibility in the system. But to address your comment about the hybrid cable, yes, it has fiber in it so that it could meet the fiber point somewhere within the cluster. It doesn't necessarily have to be at the hub, and it allows for the hub cabinet to pick up a power point somewhere within the cluster that's optimized for power. So it balances both fiber conductivity and the power connectivity. That's and it leaves the poles flexible where you can get best RF performance. So it kind of separates the three functions.
Is there an optimal number of small cells that would constitute a cluster, or, you know, how does that vary?
Yeah, we've learned a lot in this area over the last couple of years. Initially, we go into the RF planners and we say, you know, we can build out a network and power your small cells, and they have RF plans for the next 5 years for small cells. And how they plan isn't necessarily how the capacity is needed and how it's deployed. So the question is a little difficult, because the wireless functions within these companies tend to deploy 1, 2, 3 off where the capacity needs are, where they have hotspots or not spots. But the planners are looking at it from a whole solution perspective, from a regional deployment. We're looking at regions that have 40 small cells, but this year they're only planning on deploying 5.
Right, right.
And so in order to do that and balance operational and capital costs, the clusters, this first cluster we put out there will be 5 with an expandable aspect to it that'll grow to 12 just coming out of this one cabinet. So it's difficult to really say the number. For sure. But we can vary from, I can tell you from a power perspective,
right?
Our smallest cabinet is 10 kilowatts. Our largest cabinet at this point is 30 kilowatts. So we can have up to about 30 small cell poles coming out of one cabinet, and something as small as 3 or 4 coming out of a cabinet and meet the objectives of our customers.
A lot of flexibility there, right?
Yeah, there are some for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see as the biggest challenge? You mentioned a couple of issues with regard to the network operators actually planning and, you know, deploying small cells. You know, it's not, as you mentioned, it's not strictly RF.
Correct. It isn't. And that has been, well, I have to say, when we were coming into this work a couple of years ago, the big rave was all about the cost of this new network, because ultimately it comes down to hardware. We talk about virtualizing, but you do need to get fiber. Someone wrote about a wireless network is backfilled with wired connections, but, you know, we do need to make all those connections in the outside plant. And right. when you're discussing distributing small cell layer, throughout the globe, there's a lot of infrastructure gets deployed. And so there's a cost piece there. And so that really was the first challenge that we looked at was cost. The next one after that, when we look at cost and AC deployments, it is the planning piece that, you know, working and navigating with the carriers on how to plan these systems the way they did it traditionally and the way they need to do it for small cells. And so the balance of how to allow the RF teams to get optimum locations for the pole, the radio, how to have the wireline groups when they lay out this fiber network to make connections to all those locations, which they don't know necessarily at the time when they're laying them all out. And then there's power in the network, which comes from the utility. And the power utility doesn't necessarily talk to the service providers as to where they're going to put AC connections. They tend to be at streetlights or near traffic lights, for instance. And so picking up those locations and having the right amperage to then distribute those one at a time from an AC perspective was problematic. And now we're looking at it by putting a hub cabinet near those locations and then distributing the DC power and allowing all of the different elements to optimize on their own and then have a unit that kind of blends them all, if you will.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like it'll take a few iterations, but we will start to see some standardization come out of this. And I understand it, that every network is different and every deployment is different, but it seems like there are elements that could be similar or common on the various deployments.
That's true. You know, and standardization, it sometimes confines us, right? And we all struggle with that because we all have to do common things. But, you know, I find that standardization, I mean, if you take a look at trying to do 5G without some type of RAN and someone not discussing how we'll all play together or work together, it's impossible. And so when these standards all do come together, and we just recently wrote a standard on safety as it relates to distribution of power. And it's important to do that so that everyone has that information and it can go out to the regions and the regions can look at this and say, yep, I'm willing to deploy because it meets these certain guidelines. And there's actually some thought put into it. So I agree with standards. They're tough to sometimes design to, but they certainly make sure that we all work together and provide a safe, reliable solution.
This is great. What would you say the biggest benefit of the centralized power hub approach provides to the network operators?
Yeah, there's a few benefits because when we're looking at challenges, we put together a whole list of what those challenges would be early on in the game. We went and talked to all the big mobile operators that we know. And we just sat down and had discussions with them on some of the needs and some of the challenges. And so we tried to list all of those and tried to meet all of those needs day one if we could, and then try to put, and one of the things is expansion and growth. We're already talking about 6G. And so this system does allow, it's a DC bus. And because it's a DC bus, it allows you to plug into without, you know, the syncing that you would need with an AC signal, right? So it allows to plug into the network and it doesn't necessarily have to be a lot of power. It could be a little power, it could be a lot of power, but it just plugs into the network and a DC bus allows that. And what's interesting is that it not only can pull power off, because it's a DC bus, you can put power on. And so with these same connections that you pull load off, you can also plug in sources. So a lot of folks are talking about green energy initiatives and decarbonizing and things like that. And so we can do that now by plugging these systems in. So there's a benefit there. It's an integrated solution. CommScope is a global company and it does the integration. The challenges that we talked about is cost. And by integrating the solution together, it comes out of the factory tested and it kind of almost drops in place. You know, it really just does. There's connections that need to be made, but it limits the amount of outside plant work, which means it increases the reliability when it does start up and it decreases cost because less is done out in the field. And that's been really big from the municipality discussions we've been having. Disruptions are a no-no in the outside plant and they don't want any traffic problems. Yeah. So we see them all the time and we all really do not like them. But nevertheless, the municipalities do tend to, they try to limit that as much as possible. Yeah. And so by having an integrated solution, we can limit those things. I mentioned AC connections. If we had an AC connection at every pole and a cluster is 20 poles, that's 20 AC connections. You know, by having a centralized cabinet, you reduce that to one.
Right.
So that's a big benefit that really started us off with our operator friends and looking into the solution. Mm-hmm. Energy efficiency is something we don't talk a whole lot about. We're starting to talk about it as we start to see more stuff deployed. But some recent studies have shown that the energy demand is going to double every 5 years. So by 2025, somewhere around 4,000 terawatt hours, 2030, 8,000 terawatt hours. And so they're anticipating costs in the $300 billion by 2025. And when you look at that and you look at how much energy is consumed in the ICT network, it's a good place that, you know, you can really conserve and make a payment back into the grid.
Right.
And what I mean by that is when you boost voltage to 400 volts, as opposed to using 120 volts or 220 volts AC, you immediately decrease current and therefore mm-hmm. you increase efficiency. And so that's one way of providing a benefit, not only to the network operators, but to us as human beings. Mm-hmm. Energy management, some of the functions that we need to grow to, and it fits into the energy space, is how we consume energy. Today, we design networks and we always push power into the network, you know, 10, 20% above the need.
Right.
And then the amount of really traffic usage is somewhere 30 to 50%. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big gap in the amount of energy that's used versus what's planned initially. And what that really means is that our power plant is running at an efficiency much lower than it's capable of. So by designing in the energy management system, you can do things like load shaping or peak shaving, where you can match the load to the amount of energy provided so that you always have maximum efficiency on the network and you use the energy from the grid when it's least costly. There's projections that are just crazy. You know, in the morning hours, you know, 3 cents a kilowatt hour. You know, by 3 p.m, somewhere around 30 cents a kilowatt hour, because we are moving to these green initiatives. We know that's happening. We can see it in all the things we're reading, where the money's being put to develop. So we need to have a system that plans that. So a function like this allows for energy management and clusters at a time, as opposed to one off. Mm-hmm. So that's just to name a few.
Yeah, no, this is good. Well, you know, I'm sure we could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about it. It is an interesting topic. And, you know, an old power guy like myself can get deep in the weeds on this. But any wrap up or concluding remarks you'd like to leave with us, Tom?
No, I mean, this job has been great. Looking into the network and how this stuff is used, coming from the old telecom days when mm-hmm. a plain old telephone service, a PSTN network, and now looking at it the way we are has been just fun, actually. All days are great, but it's been great. So I look forward to feedback. I don't know if there's a way that feedback comes in, but
sure.
I look forward to feedback and helping to develop these networks to provide better efficiency and network availability.
That's great. Yeah, I recall I've worked in the telcos in the early days too. And, you know, five nines was something the equivalent of 30 minutes outage in 40 years. So, you know, we want to try to sustain that kind of reliability. But so this is good. So how can interested parties find out more about MetroCell Solutions and your power hub information?
Well, you can reach out to me, certainly is one method, but, you know, we have a website at comscope.com and you can go to that website. Under there has the Power Solutions page that can be sent out. But in there has all of our power solutions. We have products that power the macro site as well as these metro sites or small cell layers. Uh-huh. And within it has our product line. We have videos and content that helps to plan these networks, helps to with contact information within CommScope, but helps the customer to plan these networks and know how to best utilize these products to increase their network efficiency.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Tom, for an interesting and informative conversation. And thanks to everyone for listening in. This concludes this Tower Talks episode. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.